Right, average revenue per user per month. So $50 to $60 on average per month per user is sort of how they were thinking about it a few years ago. Now it's probably higher than that because they've got, you know, 3G and all that stuff. So, and that drove everything. That drove designing the hardware, that drove designing the services, that drove how they, you know, made deals with various service providers. That's not the world that we want the messaging and the internet, but the internet in general to be in. But that is a certain possibility. As we're moving away from these devices to these devices, the cost structures are very, very different. And then the third part is, as I said, user experience drives adoption. And so controlling the user experience becomes really, really important. Which is why it's in some ways remarkable that Twitter, for example, has, you know, let people build all kinds of different buttons so that you don't have to just do it on a website. My guess is part of it is they're cool guys, and part of it is they just don't have they're too small to just take over everything. But if you look at, say, Facebook controls the experience to an incredible degree. They do that for a bunch of reasons, but the fundamental one is that a user whose experience to control is worth more than a user just using you as a backbone. And that's reasonable, but it has implications. I'm not even going to talk about the issues that talked about in this morning's keynote, because you did a much better job than that. So to compare the architecture of email that I talked about before, where you have a message that goes over the network from you to me, to what happens on a social network. You send me a message by sending a piece of data through the social network to me. It looks the same, right? It's like this bouncing as opposed to straight up. But the key thing, that the social network part of it, is that if a friend of ours shows up, they have to be able to get the data. And so the social network keeps the data so that you can get it to your friend. Right? It's a totally reasonable architectural decision. But it means that the social network keeps the data, whereas your ISP tends to want to throw it out because they only have so many disks. And so there's an architectural difference there that the social network ends up wanting that data. And in fact, the relationship you have with your social network provider is different than the relationship you have with your email provider. The email provider, as the first speaker talked about this morning, is a carrier, it's a messenger, it's a common carrier. There's a bunch of laws about that so far mean that they don't have the responsibility to look at those messages. They're just there to provide the transport services. When you use Facebook, you're using a service, and they then provide that data to other people. They're liable, they have control, they have responsibility. There's a bunch of terms around that. The terms of service of Facebook are not the same thing as the terms of service of email. There's an interesting sort of funny story. A couple of years ago, before working in Mozilla, I was actually working on a Facebook app. And we hired ActiveSpeak. And we hired a marketing person to help us do product management and marketing for this Facebook app. And we hired him in part because he was a huge Facebook fan. He just loved Facebook. He was like, super, super legit. And we're like, great, this is exactly who we need to have in the team. And we were working on the code, and then we needed to roll out to beta. We got a list of 50 or 60 people who found out about it through Facebook, and we had all their email addresses, whatever. And he was going to send out emails to all those 50 people saying, you know, please join the beta. And I opened my mouth and said, this is stupid. They're using Facebook. You should just send Facebook messages because they live in Facebook. So that's the whole point. And he's like, yeah, you're right. And so we sent them these 50 people, or 60, I don't know what it was, an email, and had a link to the URL, the page where we were describing stuff, which had to be outside of Facebook because it wasn't a Google app, and this was early in the Facebook application platform days. And the system sort of didn't let the email go through, so he tried again. I think he maybe changed the URL to be a short URL, something like that. And then Facebook said, you've triggered our spam detection systems, your attacks will allow. So he kind of freaked out a little bit, and so he called customer service, or emailed customer service, and customer service went, and they looked at the logs and said, yeah, and he tried to send email URL to people twice. So that's against our policies. I'm sorry, your account has been canceled, and you're not allowed to use Facebook ever. And like, if it happened to me, I wouldn't have cared so much because I wasn't a Facebook kid. His life was on Facebook, right? All of his pictures, all of his friends, all of his contacts, all of his messages, everything was on Facebook. And there was no recourse. It happened that I happened to be on the IRC channel talking to one of the Facebook devs. I said, yo, this is not cool. And so he went through back channels and unlocked the account. And there's a good sort of ending to that particular story. But that experience was pretty scary to me. Right? There was a company completely within their rights, set up some rules, and they have to set up rules because they have to prevent the bad actors. They have to deal with all those issues to avoid the problems with their emails. But they have to do it in a centralized way. And so there's a few poor unlucky souls who are in charge of answering these questions from customers who trigger the algorithms that some engineer did their best to implement. But the point is, it's a centralized system. With those centralization comes governance issues, responsibility issues. There's a whole bunch of sort of complications to that architecture. It happened a month ago to one of our Mozilla employees whose email address was used to send spam on Mozilla mailing lists, which were mirrored by Google Groups. And as a result, he was locked out of Google Groups. And it's kind of a problem too, right? So this is not one. This is not a problem with any one company. It's a problem with the architecture. So the other point is, of course, in these kinds of worlds, suppose then you want to use another social network. You have to convince me to go there, or we somehow have to have some identity bridging system, which talk to Chris about if you're interested. But this is why there's all this competition about who's on top about the identity system. Are you using Open Social? Are you using Facebook Connect? Are you using OpenID? Are you using all those systems? Those are all about who's going to control that sort of central hub. So what I think people should do is appreciate the various approaches. And so there might be people in the room, this is a relatively radical group, who only use encrypted email and only browse over Tor and are very, very careful about their footprints. And I know there's people in the room who are completely living in the Facebook world and maybe have ever thought about any of these issues. And I think it's important for people to sort of understand each other's point of view. Right? It's important to understand why Facebook is so popular, why Twitter is so popular. It's important to learn from that. It's important to understand the architectural impact on data ownership, privacy, blah, blah, blah. And importantly, it's important to participate and sort of help things get better. Right? So keep looking at Chris, because Chris has been, from my perspective, trying to strong arm the Facebooks of the world to open up, and that's really cool. So thank you. So that's my speech apart. And then I was going to talk a little bit about Thunderbird. So I have no idea what time it is. I have a good time. So